Okay, so we need to keep our eye on the ball when we're doing anything. I mean, let's think of our kids as a project, and necessarily that's the best way to think about it, but if you think about that, if you think about a building project, there's a lot of details that you have to attend to, a lot of things you have to think about in terms of what kind of nails you're going to use, and what kind of tools you're going to use, and all this kind of to build this house. But what's the point of building a house? What's the point of that?
You can live in it.
Have something to live in, right? Sometimes people lose track of that, and that's why I guess there's so many divorces that happen when a couple builds a house together. They kind of lose sight of what they're trying to do there. What our goal, and from the way I'm looking at it, for our purposes, our goal is to raise kids that are really on fire for God, that really want to serve God. And if we're going to do that, then we have to be that way. That's the big picture. There's a lot of details, a lot of tips and tricks, and you know, we got discipline, and the life is really messy when you're raising your kids. You're right in the middle of that, and sometimes it's hard to keep your eye on the high goal. And however you want to word that, that's up to you. I use the word passionate because that's the word we don't use very much. And I think it calls attention to what we're trying to achieve in our kids. Does God expect us to be passionate or fervent or zealous, enthusiastic? Does God expect that from us? Can we somehow just wake up one morning and we're that? Or do we have to work on that? It's really hard, and when this came up last week, and I take it seriously because it's true, and that is, it's very hard to teach passion. I mean, we really can't do it. We can't teach enthusiasm. It's something that's got to come from within. So what we're going to do in this class, and in a few succeeding classes, is we're going to talk about how that happens. How do we get passionate about things we're passionate about? Where does that come from, and why? And that'll be our aim. I do want to establish that point, though, that we are to be ourselves passionate and enthusiastic followers of Christ. And I'll just read a couple of passages here. You can turn it to them if you want. Romans chapter 12. I'm going to look at verse 6 to 8, and then verse 11. Paul says, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them, if prophecy in proportion to our faith, if service in our serving, the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. So those of you who are leading leadership positions are supposed to do that with zeal, which really is someone who's an enthusiast. So leaders are to do that. Now, let's just pause and think about this for a minute. How is your zeal displayed? How is that shown or demonstrated? Is it Jay?
Should be genuinely, like from the heart.
Okay, often, yeah. Whatever you are, right? Coming from here. So if it's not, it's not really zeal, is it? I mean, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm has to be something that comes from within. Barrett?
Consistently demonstrated.
Consistently, okay, yeah.
You don't have, if you're kind of diving in and out, you don't seem very jealous.
I'm glad you brought that up because we in some of the examples we use, we take those from our everyday life, some hobbies you're involved in or some sports you're involved in, things that are different. You're either zealous in it or not. I mean, it's either got the zeal and enthusiastic for it, or you're not. I mean, I played golf for a while, and there's hundreds of examples like this. Everybody can think about these. But I played golf, and I was really obsessed with it, pretty much. Maybe that's the wrong word to use, but no, that's the right word to use. I was zealous. I was a zealot for my sake. So I read everything, and I got all involved in it. We were playing every week. Christy and I were playing every week, another couple. So we got all into it. We were studying the shots and all that stuff. And it was that way until it wasn't, you know, until, you know, eventually the frustration builds up and you quit the game. So until somebody, you become adult, you put away childish things. So that's what I did. But there is zeal. Here he's telling, Paul is saying that leaders are to lead with zeal. So somehow we got to gin that up. We got to be zealous in what we do. And we're going to get to the how, you know, how that happens, the process that we go through. And there's not necessarily just one, but we're going to talk about that. Down in verse 11, you'll notice that this sounds like a command to me. He says, "Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit." That idea of being fervent is the idea of kind of stretching a string. It comes from the idea of like a violin string that's stretched until it's taut, and then it plays the tune, right? If it's slacking, it won't. And so being fervent, other terms and other versions are terms like being earnest. There's one older preacher, he would always say, "Well, he's an earnest young man." What do you think he meant by that? Paul Earnhardt used to say it. He'd talk about, we maybe bring some preacher up or something, young preacher, and he said, "He's an earnest young man." What do you think he meant? Earnest. I mean, it's not a word we use very much. We don't even name our kids earnest anymore.
So like a combination of like sincere and trying hard?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's very good. Trying hard. I like that. And he was trying. He was zealous about his effort. You know, and sometimes you're not necessarily... you're not even at a point where you can be zealous about what you're doing, particularly because you don't know what you're doing. But you're zealous about trying to get there or working at that. We've all been there. And he said, and this in verse 11 is interesting because do not be slothful. He gives us the opposite of zealous. Don't be slothful. Everybody's seen Ice Age, right? Okay, well, who's we got the sloth, right? Sloth, yeah. Don't be like him. And don't be slothful in zeal. And the Greek word is zelota, zelotes probably. But a zealot, enthusiast, an adherent, one who's an adherent and enthusiastic about it. 1 Corinthians 8:16, just a phrase there, he says, "The same earnest care I have for you," Paul says, "the same earnest care." And what does that sound like? If he's telling the Corinthians, "I have this earnest care for you," maybe... And that's a little different shade of meaning, isn't it?
With intention?
Intention, yes. Intention. And definitely. And that's another thing. We're talking about what we're intentionally trying to do in the goal that we have for bringing up our kids. We want them to be passionate followers of Jesus. I'm just kind of changing the terminology. We've always said we want faithful kids, right? But sometimes we say that so much that it kind of falls on deaf ears. I mean, we want our kids to be faithful. Okay, what's faithful? Well, you know, they go to church 3 times a week. Or 2 times, you know, that's kind of like, when I was growing up, the person was faithful if they showed up. If they showed up in the building, they were that was a faithful Christian right there. Was that true necessarily?
No.
Is that all there is to it?
No.
That's a rhetorical question, almost, isn't it? Because it's not. We know that. We know that's not true. There's more to it than that. Titus 2:14. Titus 2:14. I've got a new Bible. I've gotten into this habit of buying Bibles, and now I got a new one. I can't turn the pages here, so. These pages really do stick together in some of them. I say that sometime, like turn to Haggai, here the pages stick together. These actually do. Okay, so verse 11 says, "For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions, to live self-controlled and upright and godly lives in the present age, waiting for our blessed hope, the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works." Not just doing good works. It's interesting, notice that he tells us to give up what? Worldly passions. But to be zealous or passionate about doing good works. So there's a contrast there. We're to give those... Passion is part of us. I mean, everybody has passion about something. Sometimes somebody will be real quiet and all of a sudden you'll find out that there's something that gets them going, you know, and all of a sudden that will come out, that they're passionate about that. It might be something purely secular or it might be something that they shouldn't be passionate about. But sometimes it comes out. He's telling put away the worldly ones. But he said he's purifying for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous or earnest or have zeal for good works. So not only are we to do good works, it's like you help the people of Mozambique, you do it with zeal. You do it because that's what you want to do. You have some passion about helping people. And in fact, you have calm passion. You feel with. And so that's what he died for, he says here. In 1 Peter, you know, turn over to 1 Peter 3:13, he says, now, who is there to harm you if you're zealous for good works? So kind of the same idea. Talking about the government. Generally, they're not going to, you know, chase you down or put you in jail if you're actually doing good works. And if you're zealous, if that's what you really want to do, because you're actually helping the society that you're living in. So they kind of like that. Who knows what Revelation 3:19, what's the context of that? Revelation 3:19, what church? It's one of the churches. Laodicea. We all know what he said to Laodicea, right? What did he say to him just in general? You have to quote the verse, but what does he say about Laodicea? Yeah, it's like a vomit you out of my mouth because you're lukewarm. And so he gives him, he has the remedy here. He says, you're going to join your wife with you. That's good. Is it in a marriage class? But
parenting.
Yeah, it's in a parenting class. Very good. That was a good move. So he gives them the solution. He says, be zealous and repent. The problem is they're lukewarm. So how do you do this? Just talk about us. If you're in Laodicea and you're reading this, Jesus comes to you and says this. You guys are lukewarm. You think you're rich. You think you got it all worked out. You don't. He says, you're zealous. You are lukewarm. I'm going to spit you out of my mouth if you don't change. But you got a shot here. I'm going to give you a shot. Be zealous, he says, and repent. So how do you be zealous all of a sudden? That's the question. I don't even know if I want you to start answering that right now. It's what we're thinking about. You know, how if he's telling us to be zealous, and I think we've read other things here that we're supposed to be, how do we do that? That's what we want to get to. Because we can figure out how to do it for ourselves, then maybe we can find out how to help our kids get there. And you can't make them be there. You can't make them be zealous. That's impossible. You can't make anybody be enthusiastic. Well, you could probably do that if you like hold a gun to their head or something. Probably people in that case are pretty enthusiastic about getting away from you. I had a gun held on me once when I was too long. But anyway, I worked at a hardware store, and there was somebody who was stealing the carts in the hardware store, and so these big carts. And so me and my we're just nobodies in the hardware store, but we thought we'd search out and do a little detective work and find out why the carts were being stolen. So it was night, it was dark. We went across. We just looking all over. We went across the street, started poking around in some storage sheds that were over there by the houses. And we see them through the crack. And it had padlocked on it. And there were like seven or eight of them in there. Those big ones like at Home Depot, you know. And so we see them in there. And so we're like shaking the thing. So next thing you know, a neighbor comes over. And we see the barrel of a gun pointing at us. He says, I call the police. Just stay there. You know, freeze. All. I don't know what he said. Yeah, but freeze. I'm talking a mile a minute, you know, trying to tell them what we're doing. And whatever. And we have our orange shirts. We have our orange shirts on. That tells us we're from across the street, Limbrook Hardware. So that got me motivated. I was very passionate for about 3 minutes. And then we ran. He finally let us go and ran across the street. And the police came. And nothing happened to us. We didn't get thrown in jail or anything. But, I mean, there are those times when you are under stress and you get pretty passionate about survival, right? But he's telling these people who are sitting in a church building like we sit here at Folsom to be zealous. So I think it's worthwhile to explore that. First, just a couple more. 1 Peter 1, verse 22, kind of along the same lines. Having purified, verse 22, chapter 1, having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth, for a sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly, from a pure heart, since you've been born again, and so on. Love one another earnestly. So for to love one another, you would think that you kind of leave it at that, right? If you love one, you love each other, you know. But he adds earnestly. Intensely is the force of that word. To love each other intensely, not just casually. There's a fervent flavor to our love. So the question comes, can we even command love, or can we even teach love? We can teach agape, you know, the way we often explain it and describe it as being committed to someone. But how about the feelings of love? Can you teach that? It seems kind of difficult because of where it comes from. So one reason I'm getting into this, because I think I witnessed a lot of enthusiasm in churches as I was growing up for the church and for the doctrine of the church. I witnessed a lot of that. There's a lot of enthusiasm for making sure we were doing things right. I witnessed a lot of enthusiasm among church members, and we spent a lot of time with members of the church when I was a kid. That's what something we did in churches I was in. But a lot of enthusiasm sometimes when we got outside the church. Enthusiasm for doing things right, not some enthusiasm for a lot of physical things that were going on, but not so much for the things of the church, the work of the church, and Jesus himself. I didn't hear much enthusiasm for him, even though we had Church of Christ on our door. I didn't see that as much. I did see my parents love to go to church. They love that. They never once complained about that I remember. My mother would... You know, my mother would kind of sing hymns during the week. I didn't get that at all. I didn't want to say, but that's what she did, and not just on Sunday morning, you know, and stuff. My dad was always going out and having Bible classes and stuff. But what was missing, it seems to me, was a concentration on Jesus and our love and concern for him. And so we had the Bible stories in classes. We had David and Goliath. I had that story just like you did, and I had the story of Noah and the Ark and stuff, but I didn't see the connection. I mean, it was never made, so I didn't think about the connection. Because I never got the point of those stories, except, okay, David was a little guy who killed a big guy. That's pretty cool. But I could see that in secular stories. See what I'm saying? I wasn't going to go kill any giants. Those sermons where they told you, you know, kill your giants, you know, those didn't hit, I don't know. Even when I was older, those didn't make much sense to me. Because they took Goliath, the real guy Goliath, and made him some kind of concept, you know, and that's not what it was. I don't think that's the point of that story at all. Jesus was sort of like David and kind of slew the giant, didn't he? Isn't that what he did? What's the giant that Jesus killed? Death, okay? Sin and death, right? And how did he do it? With a slingshot? No, he did it by suffering, by dying on a cross. And so, I mean, nobody made that point, though. You didn't see that connection made. Knowing the ark, you know, we had those kinds of things. I wasn't going to build a big ark. I didn't. And so I didn't see that. So what I'm trying to say as parents is we need to get the big picture is that we need to get our minds on Jesus and keep them there and do everything we can. And make sure everything that we do, as much as we think about it in the messy world of raising kids, everything we think about is feeding that goal. And we think of it from that perspective. How can I make Jesus a common part of our language, our conversation, our communication, and everything that we do? And we didn't do that very well when we were raising Angie and Dave. We didn't think of it. Nobody told me to do that. Lisa?
It sounds like you're saying is to be intentional and have a plan.
Have a plan.
Yeah, have a plan. And as first generation Christians, many of us are here, and it's a little different because you're new and you need to work together and teaching and training and staying strong. and you can't rely on your family to help you. So there is a plan, and you're more. I feel like you're more committed.
Yeah, then that's my point. I mean, okay. I mean, this is what I've been talking about. We talk about this goal here. Okay, we want to get to here, and that is passion for Christ. What do you want to call it? Zeal for Christ. Jesus himself said, I've been consumed by zeal for my house. I mean, he made that comment himself. His zeal led him to the cross. And he's who we're supposed to be emulating, right? And so this is the goal, but okay, you got kids over here, little kids. And you're a parent. You're the big P, you know? And you got two of you. And, you know, you're trying to get them through life, right? So sometimes the trip here, you know, the way I see it, it's like that's really messy, really difficult. And what you want right now and today, what you want is you want an answer for here because you're having this problem, and that's the way it is. I know it is. And so, but we have to, when we're doing that, somehow we got to keep our wits about us and keep that big goal in mind that we're trying to aim them toward Jesus. Brady.
I don't really know what you were drawing there, but...
Well, I don't understand why not.
I was thinking about the times that I've been the most outwardly zealous in my life, and this is kind of a no-brainer that doesn't even need to really be said, but of course it's in times when you feel the least amount of self-sufficiency, right? So if you got some persecution happening to you, or when you're lonely, or when you're physically poor, or you know something's going on in your life where there's a stressor, then it's easier to be zealous for Christ outwardly. So then I combine that with what I've done and what I think a lot of couples in this room have done with regards to setting ourselves up for having kids. You know, I got married to a wonderful woman who supports me in every single way, right? I got my education under my belt, and we bought a home, and we set up kind of this financial stratosphere so that we could have kids in a responsible way. So basically, I have built this system of self-sufficiency around myself to get ready for this moment when this kid comes into my life. And now, I am not in a very persecuted state. And so I don't have that stimulus that has come at different points in my life to kind of bring me back to that reality that I am in desperate need of a savior, right? And so the challenge, I think, to me anyways, is how do I acutely get myself into that position where I live my life as if I have, because I do, a very real need there, and get that through to my kids in a time when it seems like everything is just kind of provided. Don't really have any much of a need, right? Yeah. Still need to remember that.
Yeah.
It's challenging at this state, I guess.
Yeah, that's stating the issue very well. You did everything before you had your kids, it's just like the opposite of what we did before we had our kids. But okay, we're having kids. So we got nothing. But
I was thinking that's why he doesn't understand
this. I know, he doesn't understand this. This was like a straight line, right? You just said, get it all. Yeah, okay, you got parents, you got kids, and you think, oh good, we got kids, and look at the little thing, you know, just so precious, and then, you know, you get onto these things. I mean, it's not accurate because you have the teenagers like this. So, I mean, it's not to scale. But the point is, what I'm trying to appreciate and remember is that their life, the raising of children is a day-to-day thing, as you all know, that you're raising kids, and there's ups and downs and challenges every single day. And it's very, very easy because of that, all those stressors and all those things, to kind of say, well, give me a tip that will help me today. You know, what do you do? How do you discipline your kid? And I'll try that. We tried like 40 things to discipline our kids and had them, you know, stuff on the refrigerator and all over the walls and everything else. But, and you forget, okay, the big goal here, the big goal here is to get them, but you know, the big goal, get them to Christ, to get them to focus. That's what the ultimate goal is. That's what we're trying to get, right, Christy?
Well, you used an illustration at the very beginning of class about a house. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to build this wonderful house to live in, you're not going to take shortcuts. You're right. Not going to build with, what's the word?
Bad stuff.
Inferior products. And you're not going to give up.
Right.
Because you want that house complete. And I'm seeing parents just say, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. But you can't give up if you look for the goal and you want to be the type of parent. You're going to make so many mistakes. I know we did. And what you do is you get back up, look at that goal, and say, I've got to complete this task. I've got to put my best into it. And that's your main job, I think. And think about it. It's not whether they do soccer well. It's not whether they go to school and get straight A's well. It's not whether they are the best, most popular children in school. Those are not important if the goal of going to heaven isn't accomplished and right. Christ is their goal.
Right.
So, sorry.
She does a real preaching in the family. Yeah, I mean, there's
with love and obedience and different things along the way, and a wooden spoon.
Yeah, but we are
now
secret. No, I mean that
40 spoons.
Hmm?
40 spoons.
40.
40. He said 40.
40. 40. 40 wooden spoons. Yeah, I mean this is true. I think. And other things, and we try to keep the goal in mind. We can remember, we can think about it in smaller parts in the house illustration. We've used obviously Matthew 7, where you build your house on the foundation of rock and not on sand. And you know, the idea is to get the house built, and so that it stays built when you come through storms and things. And so that's a biblical illustration. But Jesus doesn't go through the process of building that thing. He just says, okay, here's something that's kind of common sense. You build on a good foundation. You don't build on a sandy foundation. And what I'm talking about is the getting all the tools together and the nailing and all that stuff that gets to be sometimes just absolute drudgery. Sometimes a little more interesting. Sometimes things go wrong when you're trying to build something. And yet you keep that goal in front of you, and then it gets there. Heather.
Is the fact that more often than not it seems like it does go wrong.
Well, it does, yeah.
And not being discouraged by that and giving up, like Christy said. It's the getting back up and continuing to try.
Right.
And actually knowing going into whatever day it is that you're probably going to mess up. And in the end game, that's okay as long as you keep trying. And God does that with us in our Christian, just in our everyday life. It's the challenge to continue to try. We can't do it perfectly, but all he asks is that we continue to try. And that follows into your parenting.
Exactly. Yeah, right. I mean, and the kids are going to make their own, as they get older, they're going to make their own decisions. So what we're trying to communicate here is the fact that, one thing, is that as we go through that process and the failures and everything else, that eventually they have to decide to follow Christ or not. Right? It's their choice. Now, you know, when do you give them that choice? You know, you're going to church. You know, you're going to make them. You're going to make do certain things. You're going to discipline. But there's a point when they've got to make that choice. We're not saying too much. What we're saying is not too much different than we're saying they're going to have their own faith. We say that can't be your faith. It's got to be. We don't want any. You know, you don't want your kids sitting in a church building someplace, do you? Just for that, the third tier. In the back, even if they're sitting in the front, they're sitting in the back in their mind. They're not there. They're like, you know, I was raised on the pew, sat on the pew. I've sat there lots of times and not been there. I mean, I know what that feels like. I understand what that feels like. We don't want our kids to think, well, that's what it's about. As long as I show up, or worse. I mean, obviously, we're trying to keep today you've got to be like an apologist and an evangelist to raise kids, I think, because you've got to be able to answer some of their questions or at least deal with those. And those are probably more difficult than the ones we dealt with in our day. But that's what you got to be. You got to be light on your feet.
Just one other little thought. My dad is turning 90, and I was there on Monday. And my dad said to me, he said, "I sure want to see you in heaven." And I said, "Okay, Dad, that's going to happen." He said, "I hope to see all my grandchildren. I hope to see all my great-grandchildren." He said, "That's my goal, and I hope that I get there." And then you do.
Right.
So I think that's good to hear that and think about that, even say that to your kids. I just thrown that out there.
No, that's good. I think it'd be a bad idea to try to project yourself at 90 and kind of look back on where you want to be, what you want to be saying to your kid that's, you know, at that time, been hurt. Kind of can you think of yourself at that point. Rich.
So I totally agree with you that the zeal is fundamentally important. And again, all these things that we're going to talk about for the rest of these classes about how to do it day to day, that's hard and you can't give up. But the zeal thing that you're getting at, I really do think that that is the key, as you said two classes ago, that if we can get kids that have zeal, that's what matters. And I think you're totally right in saying that that zeal is going to be whether we have zeal, largely, right? And if we don't have zeal, it's kind of like they're inoculated against zeal. They're not going to have it. So in terms of, I think you asked a really good question. How do we have zeal? And what leapt to my mind is Matthew 6. Jesus is talking about the eye is the lamp of the body, and if your eye is dark, then how dark is the body going to be? But he says, coming right out of that, if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. No one can serve two masters. I think he's bringing those two teachings together because what you are focused on with your eye, what you allow yourself to be distracted by, aside from Jesus, that's what will dilute your zeal. Because those other things will get your attention and will get your enthusiasm. And, you know, I think it's noteworthy that the teaching right before that part about the eye being the light, the lamp of the body is, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, right? So I think if what we spend our attention time, our thinking, and our effort on is material things, is entertainment, then that's just going to dilute our focus on God, which would have brought us zeal. And I think if we can force those things out of our lives, however we have to do it, largely through iron sharpening iron with our spouse and our friends in the church, but if we can get rid of those other influences and distractions, what we'll be left with is going to have to be zeal, because it is the pure light, right? And I think that's what Jesus is telling his followers, that get rid of the darkness, and that light is going to make you excited about it. And then your kids are going to see that.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Obviously, that's well said. He kind of said that in, was it the Titus passage, where he said you shed the worldly passions. He acknowledges that we're passionate about things. This is the thing, and I do think that it's helpful for us to go tap into those and kind of say, okay, why am I so passionate about this? What brought me here? What got to me to this point? And why am I passionate about this? And maybe less so about my relationship with Jesus. I mean, that's the thing. That those are the hard questions we got to ask. Because we're, as you noticed in this class so far, we're focusing more on us than, you know, just the tips and tricks of raising kids. I mean, we're talking about the parent. I loved it. Who said it was? I don't know, Jamie or somebody said, what's the biggest challenge for that question? And they said, I am, you know. It's like, that's true. I mean, if we just stop and be honest with ourselves, we say, my kid may be doing better, but if they had a better example. And I know we all can say that about anything. But that's the idea. Is the idea is to challenge ourselves and push ourselves up and model all of this better. Let's just step back for a minute. And by the way, I just kind of maybe piggyback on that comment from Rich is that when I was thinking of Rick Brady, when you're looking at what was Laodicea's problem? Do you remember how that's worded in Revelation? You can turn there if you want, just real quickly. Revelation 3.
They think they're rich.
They were in a mental state that they felt that they had it made. They had it all kind of figured out. That was the problem with that church, and that turned out to be not only false but devastating to them. He says, verse 15. I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. And I think that means that they should have been either cold or hot. Cold being good and hot being good is what I believe that means, not, the other. Cold is good, hot is good. Cold water is good, hot water is good. What about lukewarm water? What do you do with that? It doesn't do anything. Would that you were either cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. For you say, I am rich, I have prospered, I need nothing, not realizing that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to go on. And then he says, later on, he says to repent and be zealous. So somehow we can ramp up that zeal. I think Rich is right, if we get rid of the other stuff that is taking that away from us, because we're certainly capable of it. We've all proven that. I've proven that countless times. I'm one of those guys that gets really passionate about something and goes on to something else. But that's, I'm proving to myself that I can do that.
Well, and I think in this passage, he's saying they don't realize that they're wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked.
Right.
And then he says, and because you are these things, this is what I counsel you to do. I think the zeal comes from having that need and recognizing that need. And Brady was talking about this
Brady's
earlier.
Point, right, Brady? Just pause a minute. That's kind of you recognize the need, and then you.
That's what got me thinking about that. Actually, is just that how do you get to the point where you are poor in spirit and you're blessed because you're poor in spirit?
Yeah. And it's hard when we all kind of share the wealth of the community, that we live in. It's more of a challenge because we're not in need. We're not in physical need. So how do you, that's why Jesus said in Matthew to probably a lot of poor people, he said, be poor in spirit. You're already poor, but are you poor in spirit? Poor people can be rich in spirit. You would agree with that, right? They could be desiring to be rich and therefore not really poor in their thinking and not really humble in their thinking. Yeah, and so here, the church, he's speaking to the church that felt like they were at it all together and they didn't, they lost their sense of need. So that does connected with what Brady was making. How do we go back? One of the questions here, and we're kind of piling up some questions that we need to answer eventually in the quarter, but what is, how do we kind of maintain that sense of need? Right? Is that how do? Because we do. Do anybody here not need Jesus? You got him. You kind of had enough of him. You're filled up with him, so there's no more room. I mean, we all recognize that we need him every single day, and we need to actually explore why that is. Ask that question: why do I need Jesus? I mean, is he just a man who lived, and kind of we've decided that it's okay? I mean, what's really at the bottom of why we are a church with Christ on the? I think, what is all that all about? That makes sense? I mean, we're not, obviously, I haven't answered anything yet, but we're exploring this. Let's just step back for a minute. What have you been passionate about, and why? I mean, name something within reason. What have you felt some passion for? There's certain things off the table. I'm just trying to say. Jay?
So one thing that I'm was passionate about, but not good at, was basketball.
Okay.
And our coach, one of his things, when you're talking about this, I keep thinking about it in my head because he drilled it in our head. there was two things. Number one, we weren't going to be the most talented, but we were going to be in the best shape. That was the deal. So we ran a lot.
Yeah.
But one of the triggers to get us to run is if we were ever just going through the motions. Run in place, just going through the motions. You never want to go through the motions around him. And if you did, he'd make you run. But what it would do is it would help you to focus and trigger it in with yourself that you shouldn't be going through the motions. Are you going through the motions?
Yeah.
So that's a good trigger for me. It's like, where am I? Am I idle? Well, I'm lukewarm. But if I'm going toward something, then I'm going toward that hot or cold that you were talking about.
Yeah. Very good. So the concept can be taught, right? I mean, you can stress that over and over, probably not just once, right? Yeah. I mean, over and over and over again. That you get, finally you get it into your head, wait, going through the motions is not a good thing for anything, right? That's what he's trying to teach you. I appreciate that about coaches who see the bigger picture. He's really trying to train a young man to see, or young men to see, okay, that's not the way to live. And that helps, right? You get those kind of life lessons from something that's not very important in the long run. What else?
I know you said there are things off the table, but this is...
Uh-oh.
My
1 minute.
Marriage and my children is something that I'm passionate about, and it's the kind of, aside from hopefully serving Christ, is kind of the only thing that I've kept passionate about. Because I've gotten passionate about cycling and baking cakes, but I mean, Michaela even made fun of me at camp because I just wouldn't stop talking about Trey. You know, so you there's certain things that you can sustain passion for, and your marriage and your children should be one of them. But
yeah. The
point is that it's hard to keep the passion unless you really are passionate.
Unless there's something of value there that you see that you. That keeps that burning. It may not be basketball, golf, skiing. I'm all the things I'm passionate about. Those are temporary things, but those are these lasting things. Yeah, okay, we'll pick up that next time, next Wednesday. So, thank you.